Now, back to a couple of guys who believe Rin Tin Tin may have rusted to death. It's the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show on 1320 WILS.
We're back here with the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show. And Rick and Kirby, we have with us as a returning guest on the line, Bill Thompson III, who is the publisher of Birdwatchers Digest. Welcome back to the show, Bill.
Thanks a lot, Lee.
Oh, it's our pleasure to have you. Bill, it's spring, it's birding season, and I would imagine that all of the birds, if they haven't returned yet, they are fast on their way, correct?
Oh, that's right. You know, with the mild winter we had, everybody was kind of expecting stuff to show up early, a lot of birds to show up before their normal dates. And those of us who've been birdwatching for a lot of years kind of have an idea. Oh, you know, at my farm in southeast Ohio, the hummingbirds show up about tax day, which is one of the nice things about, the only nice things about tax day. This year, the hummingbirds showed up a week late. So it's been real interesting. Some things have come back early. The whippoorwills were back early. Our orioles were back early. Scarlet tanager was back early. But I'm up here on Lake Erie right now, birding along the lake here at some of the famous hot spots. And, you know, it's been a real mixed bag. We've got some late birds that are here early and some early birds that aren't in yet. So it's, I think the mild winter just messed everybody up.
Interesting. And for people who are trying to figure out what they should be out attracting and what they should be putting out, what steps should they be taking in order to draw some of these wonderful birds to stop by and visit on their way?
Well, you know, it's a great time to continue your winter bird feeding program because in many cases, on a cool day, the insects aren't out. Maybe the fruit isn't quite ripe yet for some of the fruit-eating birds. So it's a great idea to keep your bird feeding program going and clean the feeders and restock them a couple more times into the summer. It's great to have water out. That's a big attractant for a lot of birds that won't come to a bird feeder, things like wood thrushes and thrashers and bluebirds. And then, you know, of course, it's also the perfect time of year to start your hummingbird feeding for summer. Most everybody in your listening audience, the hummingbirds are back in the area now. So it's a great time to hang that out. And with those three things, you've got a great chance at attracting the eye of any bird passing by.
And this year, nature's off a little off cadence. I would imagine that it might actually be a more predictable thing out in the backyard because they can at least predict when that's going to be there.
Exactly. Yeah, and you know, all birds have kind of a rhythm. You know, I notice at our feeders that there's a certain rhythm. The cardinals are often the first bird to show up in the morning, and they stay late. So our resident birds are loyal and never leave us. and that's, you know, always the mainstay of our backyard bird watching is the birds that stick with us all year.
Mm-hmm. Hi, Bill. Kirby here. I know you were just at a festival in West Virginia last week, I think.
That's right. Yeah, the New River Birding Festival.
Right. And I'm planning on running into you at a festival in North Dakota in a couple weeks here, too.
Oh, great. Potholes and Prairie.
Yep. And we've got one in Michigan coming up next weekend at Tallis Point State Park that catches a lot of the migrants that go up to the Lake Huron Coast. You have a lot of fun at those festivals and think that's a good way for people to get started in kind of meeting some other birders and getting to see some interesting things?
Yeah, that's right, Kirby. It's really, you know, the birding festivals have burgeoned. When we started Birdwatchers Digest in 1978, really there were one or two sort of general nature festivals. There's one, the Festival of the Cranes out in North New Mexico, and a few things on the East Coast, like New Jersey Audubon had a few birdwatching weekends that they did. Now there are more than 400 birding festivals around North America, and all of them virtually welcome people of any level of interest in birds. You know, if you're just casually interested, it's a great way to go out with people who are more interested and who know where the birds are and how to identify them, where to find them, and all that stuff. I love going to the festivals because it gives me a chance to get out in the field and see actual birds instead of just writing them and editing about them all the time, which is, you know, much less exciting.
Yeah, I noticed another thing that I saw. I was just down in McGee Marsh last week, and there are a lot of parents out there that are bringing their kids out, and you see some kids that are barely big enough to hold binoculars, and their parents are teaching them how to identify flycatchers. I know you've got a couple teenage kids at home, I think. What can you do to get the kids involved in that other than taking them out to things like this?
Well, that's a really good question. You know, a lot of people have been worried over the last 20 or so years that kids are kind of losing their connection to nature because they are spending more time inside on their games or their computers or watching TV. I mean, when I was a kid, we had one TV channel, and it came in poorly. And I might watch an hour of cartoons on Saturday, but the rest of the time I was outside because that's where the fun was. Now kids are much more tuned into their digital devices and their iPods and iPads and stuff like that. So people have been worrying for a long time that the kids are getting detached from nature. And so I think birds are about the easiest way to get a kid interested in the outdoors. A lot of kids play sports and things like that, but that's different. You know, what I'm talking about is getting a kid out to look at a butterfly or to smell a blooming flower or to look at a bird. And, you know, birds are just, they're super cool. They're colorful. They sing songs. They can fly, you know, which is something we humans only figured out about 100 years ago. So they're just awesome creatures, and it's a really great thing. I'm leading a bird walk for kids and families tomorrow on International Migratory Bird Day at Ottawa National Wildlife Refuge, just east of Toledo. And I'm hoping to have a lot of kids there, and that's the main reason why I did my Young Birders Guide, was to give parents and kids and teachers and grandparents a little reference book to take along with them when they're out there, to make it easy, you know, to make it easy and fun.
Yeah, I would say I just got back from a vacation, and the one thing I did do is stop along the state parks down in Georgia. And the one thing I definitely, because I had this show coming up, and I said, okay, I'm going to stop and just think about this. And I didn't have to think very long because I heard noises everywhere. I would imagine
right.
If it wasn't for the birds, you know, the woods would be a whole lot quieter. I mean, I gained a greater appreciation, and it made me want to be a birder once I just started thinking about it.
Yeah, you know, Rick, that's a good point you make. Years and years ago, Rachel Carson wrote her famous book, Silent Spring, about the harmful effects of chemicals on and pesticides on bird populations, and how if we let it go without regulating it or controlling it, one day we might wake up and there would be no bird song. And, you know, that's just unfathomable. You can't imagine. When you wake up in the morning, you hear the cardinals and the robins going and the wood thrushes. And I mean, it's just incredible. And this time of year, the bird symphony is at its peak. So I would encourage anybody, once they get done listening to the show, to step outside and just listen to see how many birds, different bird voices they can hear. It's an amazing time of year to be outside with your ears open.
Bill, it's an interesting point that you guys speak of, because one thing that I've observed is a lot of people will take along a book and try and identify by sight. And yet I would imagine that as an experienced birder, the way that you get on the trail of some of the more unique birds is by recognizing the sound of their song. And I'm wondering,
that's right,
where do people go to learn the different songs so that they can begin to identify by ear instead of by
right.
sight?
Well, the best way is to go out with a more experienced bird watcher, or even just by yourself, go out, hear a song, and track it down to the bird. And, you know, we bird watchers use these things called mnemonics, which are sort of almost nonsense phrases that we use to memorize bird songs. So, for example, the barred owl, we say, kind of has a song that says, who cooks for you, who cooks for you all? And the chestnut-sided warbler says, pleased to meet you, Miss Beecher. Now, that's just a way to remember the kind of the rhythm. And there, I could go on. I could give you an hour's worth of mnemonics. But, you know, it's funny. I learned those as a kid, and I had to, because just like where you guys are, it's heavily wooded where I grew up in southeast Ohio. And if you didn't know the bird songs, you couldn't know what birds were there and track them down to see them. Because if the leaves were out in an early spring like we've had this year, you know, sycamore leaves down there are bigger than a dinner plate, and you could have five warblers hiding behind any leaf. So I really had to learn them as a kid. So go out with another birder, go track them down as yourself, or there are lots of good online references that have bird sounds. There's the Fish and Wildlife Service website at the Patuxent Wildlife Center. If you just Google bird songs, U.S. Fish and Wildlife, that site will come up. There's All About Birds, which is the Cornell site, which has a lot of sounds. And then there are lots of apps that people can download to their phones that have bird songs, and you can test yourself with them.
I know my daughter's boyfriend picked up at a nature center, was giving away a lot of stuff. One of the things they gave away was a tape. Because it was kind of old school, let's get rid of all this stuff, of the birds of North America. He happened to have an old school car, so it would fit mm-hmm. in there. And nice. Every time you would get into his car, all he'd be playing is, you know, it would be the whole series of different sounds. And he knows them very well now.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's, you know, that's the whole repetition thing. If you want to memorize something, that's why, if you think about it, all these tapes on TV, CDs, advertising, learn a new language in 10 days. All they're doing is playing it into your head repetitively, and you memorize it eventually. Your brain gives up, and it stores it back there for you to reference later.
Yeah.
Hey, Bill, one thing about the playing the songs and having everybody has these MP3 players that they can take mm-hmm. out with them into the woods to identify the birds, is it damaging sometimes if people are playing a lot of those songs out in the woods where the birds are singing themselves? It might be distracting to them.
Yeah, you know, there's a fine line, Kirby, that you kind of have to walk there. And you know, those of us who lead bird walks, when I was in West Virginia, and this will happen in North Dakota when we're out there together in June, you know, there are certain places where I go where I know I'm probably going to be the only bird group that comes there all year long. And you do have an advantage if you can play the song of a barred sparrow or a golden-winged warbler in the habitat of a male that's, you know, he's already set up a territory. You can draw them out so people can see them. But you don't want to abuse that because you don't want to wear the birds out. In other words, they hear the song of another member of their same species, and they think, somebody's trespassing on my turf, and they rush out to defend it. And oftentimes they make themselves very visible, and you can, while they're all worked up, you can get a great look at them. But if you do that repeatedly, you waste a lot of their energy. And I think you can probably, do some damage to their reproductive success and certainly to their level of energy. And you don't want to do that. So we always say to use those things with great caution and sensitivity because, you know, we always want to be mindful of the birds that we love so much. We don't want to mess them up. We want them to be happy and healthy. And as long as they're willing to come out and give us a look every now and then, I think we owe it to them to respect their privacy, as it were.
And I would imagine now that I was out there walking around the woods this weekend, I thought maybe the very best piece of equipment you could have when you're out there looking for these guys is a good pair of shoes. Would that be true?
You know, it's a good thing to be able to walk after a bird to find it. We were at the end of our festival in West Virginia. We had several really, really rainy days. And I had what I thought was pretty good rain gear. But, you know, really good rain gear only keeps you dry for maybe an hour or two. And then it finally gives up the ghost. And I found myself kind of standing there shivering, trying to keep my legs in the center of my pants legs. So I wasn't touching the cold, wet, rubbery, you know, thing. But, yeah. Good gear is really essential. And, you know, when I started out bird watching, you couldn't get good gear. It was leather boots and canvas backpacks. And nowadays we have all these fancy space-age, fabrics. And it's really the golden age for outdoor adventure. And we're very lucky about that.
We don't have much time left, but just a few cautionary notes if somebody's going to go venture on their own that they need to think about when they go out into the woods.
Well, you know, you never want to go out into the woods without letting somebody know where you're going. And especially if you're going somewhere where you have no cell phone coverage. I found myself stuck in a bog right up on the Minnesota-Canadian border about 6 years ago with a badly sprained ankle. And I thought, no one's going to know where I am, and they're going to find some bones and a really nice pair of binoculars when the snow clears next spring. So, you know, you always want to let people know where you're going, and then just be sensible, be cautious. Always, have your phone, let someone know where you're going. You know, I have an app on my phone that's got a compass, and it works even when the GPS doesn't. And there have been a few times when I've been on a trail where that compass has come in mighty handy. Uh-huh. So even better, take an actual compass that doesn't need a battery. Because, you know, that's the other thing. People say, will field guides on phones take over for printed ones? I said, no, because I've never had my printed field guide run out of battery.
Yeah, right. And I suppose leaving breadcrumbs along the trail doesn't really work well.
No. You'll turn around and there'll be a flock of birds right there having eaten every crumb you've dropped.
Yeah, I would just imagine. And, Bill, if any of our listeners are interested in taking a look at any of your books or your fine publication, where can they get more information about them?
Well, thanks, Leah. Anybody who wants to learn about the entire Birdwatchers Digest media empire can go to birdwatchersdigest.com, and that's all one word, no apostrophe S, and on the URL, birdwatchersdigest.com. Or they can just Google Bill of the Birds, and that goes to my blog, which also links to everything else, our website and our podcast and all that other stuff.
Fantastic. We've been speaking this morning with Bill Thompson III, the publisher of Birdwatchers Digest. Bill, thank you so much, and we'll be in touch again this fall to talk about what we need to do to prepare for the flight back south. So thank you very much.
Thanks, guys. I really appreciate it. You all have a good spring.
You as well. And Rick and Kirby, after the break, we're going to continue the conversation with Joyce Schulke from Wildernest in Brighton, right here on the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show on 1320 WILS and 1320WILS.com.
Got some ideas, questions, suggestions? Email us at mmpets@1320wils.com or message us on our Facebook page at facebook.com/mmpets. Like us on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/mmpets. You can upload your own pictures and interact with other pet enthusiasts.